we're ready to begin.
Okay.
Maybe you start by telling me your background.
Well, I'm an old-time family here. We're born out here about 8 miles south of where we are now. And my maternal great-grandfather and his wife came west in 1852. And I'm the other great-grandfather on that side came up in 54 from California. And my father came out in 1883, I guess it was. He had just graduated from Yale and came out here and started in law. And just the year that he died, during the same year, he bought this ranch out here, which was the old Foster Logging Works, between Chambers Prairie and Bush Prairie. And his brother ran it for him, and well, he was my father was a judge here in Limited, and but he died that year, and they kept the farm and grew up on this farm. I have four brothers and myself, and two of the brothers have stayed on the farm, and the rest of us have done this and that. So that's the background.
Did they ever talk about if you'd known your
I knew my grandfather and my grandmother. My grandmother died when I was five, but I remember her well. And she left a written record of her experiences, so that we have that. And my grandfather died when I was 11. And really, we know very little about him. Though we knew him and enjoyed him, we never knew how much of what he said was fact and how much was for a good story. So that we're that's not so clear, but he was an early logger here. Logged off, well, most this area around here, and a good deal of the of West Seattle in Seattle, and various parts. And Gavin was more or less of a promoter type. They started a racetrack out here in Lacey, which has just this last month been cut into. It's becoming a development now. But it's been there and been used for training horses ever since. Also built the first building of McNeil Island, the prison there. So I hear, I have it in first-hand knowledge. That gives a little idea of that story.
Your family lived around Olympia, not around Seattle?
No, primarily around Olympia.
Did you say your father was a judge?
Yes, a superior judge.
So when you wrote me, you said at the time that the strike first broke out, you were going to school in Seattle?
Yes, I was, what year was that?
1919.
So I would have been, I went up in the fall of 16, in 1919. I must have been a junior that year. And by that time, we were settled down in our corner of the campus. And I say it was just a little country school in the corner of the university. My first year, I was there more as a regular student. I didn't get into architecture until my second year. But after that, just everything centered around that little old building. And we went out of it for our engineering and for our science courses and our English and languages. But always we'd go from those right back to the building. We worked great deal day and night there. So that I really didn't take part in college affairs to any extent, just in the department affairs.
Do you remember the build up to the strike? Do you remember what just suddenly happened? What was it like?
I really couldn't tell you. I think back over it, there was a great deal of unrest that year. And we had had before that, in our English classes, we had a great deal of, our reading was along the line of the labor problems and the Industrial Revolution and whatnot. So there was a great deal of interest among college students. say that, again, our little group had about as little to do with it as anyone could.
So then, when it happened, it sort of put your group or you by surprise at the time?
We knew it was coming, but I don't think anyone really realized what a strike was until it was there. It was something you talked about but didn't experience.
Did you know at the time what the cause of it was, or do you remember now how?
Well, we got very biased views of it. We got biased views from both sides, and you really didn't know what it was all about. You didn't know which side to believe, or of course the truth was probably somewhere in between the two. But of course the capital end of it had the most power. And I think of it down here at Centralia, and undoubtedly that was in Harvey's book too, about the parade down there in which some of them were killed. And I know some of the families of the capitalist side of it, but I don't know the labor side of it at that time. My sympathies, I would say, would probably have, at that period, would have been with labor. But it would have been a casual interest again.
Uh-huh. What did you expect of it? Did you think of it as being just a larger strike than a normal strike, or a revolution, or?
As I say, to us, it was just exciting. We weren't, I don't think there was any thought that it would come to anything, that it would be just something of a matter of days and that would be it. But I don't know how others viewed it. Right?
How did it affect your day-to-day life?
Well, actually, as far as my day-to-day life, I would say that it didn't affect it at all, except for the excitement and the rumors and the rumors that were coming in from downtown and whatnot.
I had to get your letter out and maybe read some of
those
rumors. That was I was so excited when I got your letter.
But you know, I felt really quite foolish in even suggesting Harvey O'Connor, because I didn't. Wasn't even sure that article that I'd read in Fortune was by him. But he was an outstanding boy. He was obviously an intellectual chap, and he had a hard life. In this particular English class that he was in, we were required to write our autobiography. And in writing it, you get started writing about yourself, and you forget that you'll have an audience. And then the time limit comes and you can't change it, so you turn it in, and there were four of them read, and his was among them. And that is why I remember him so particularly, because it did give his background and his struggle to get to college and what he had been through and his disappointment in college, so that it stuck in my mind. The other three were particularly interesting to me, too. Or the other two. Mine was the fourth one. But one of them was a girl from Tacoma who had come to college to take architecture. She found she couldn't get in the architectural department, so she was dropping out of school. Well, naturally, I seized on her, and she turned out to be one of our most brilliant students. And then the other one was a boy that was raised in Germany. His father was in the diplomatic service, and he had been educated over there while they were over there in the diplomatic service. And this was just before the war. And he was worried lest we'd get into the war. And he was hoping to goodness we didn't. He had all these friends over there and close connections, and tried to present the German point of view on it. But he said that if we did get in, that he would enlist. And Harvey O'Connor, this is digressing a little bit, but just shortly after that, we went into the war. That strike had to be before 19.
I think it's just at the end of the war.
Oh, it wasn't.
Just after the war.
But Harvey hadn't been in. That English class was before the war. Because we held an assembly to condemn the senators who were opposed to the war, and as a mess, we were for it. No pretense, we were. But they asked for everyone in the assembly who was in favor of this motion to censor these senators to rise, and we all rose in mass. I think everyone in the college was there, and it was about 5,000 that time. And then they asked for those opposed, and there were two in the audience stood up. And one was Harvey O'Connor, and the other was this boy who had been raised in Germany. And this boy that was raised in Germany went out right by us. He was weeping as he went out. But Harvey, I don't imagine, I would think he was of tougher stuff, and he probably was proud to stand up on it. But I didn't see him. I saw him stand, but he wasn't anywhere near me.
Maybe I'll read these rumors.
Okay.
So interesting. That first, maybe I should ask you, why did you? This is a list of rumors that you wrote down on the first day of the strike. Why is it that you wrote them down?
Well, it was, as I say, it was an exciting thing to us. This was all exciting.
Did you think of it as historically significant at the time, or?
No, I don't think I did.
It was just,
I may have a little more than the average because of these English classes. These English classes happen to be ones in which this sort of thing was discussed. So I probably had a little more interest than the average student. But I wouldn't say I had very much.
Well, here they are. The main water pipe blown up, the dam in Cedar River blown up, the university district patrolled, three policemen killed, crowd of 500 gathered on corner around Army ambulance. Hotel Seattle burned, 110 injured, 5 killed. The school closed. The Shanghai restaurant burned, 7 burned to death. The city under martial law. The downtown streets patrolled by soldiers of the regular army. And the cutting of electric wires threatened.
Well, quite a number of the students walked downtown, you see, to see what was going on. And they brought back all these rumors. And
then is that how did you get information during the strike when the newspapers were...
It was just through people who went downtown. Personal observations and what they heard, mostly what they heard.
Did the students have, would you say, were they on one side or the other? Were they opposed to the strike or for the strike, or was it just a holiday?
I would say that probably for most of them, it was more or less it was with me. It was something exciting. There were those who were definitely on labor's side, and there were those who would be definitely on the other side. But I would say the mass were simply interested. Yes, go ahead.
Do you remember when the Army did come in?
We didn't see anything of it in the university.
So they never came up to the university?
No.
Did the strike touch the university at all?
I would say that it touched it very slightly. Simply the fact that you couldn't get things from downtown, you didn't have transportation, and it didn't go long enough to affect food and things of that sort, you see.
The school continued to run
as
normal?
Yes, yes.
Did you, or did anyone you know, go down and eat in any of the strike kitchens during the strike?
No. No, anyone who was at the university was pretty well in shape, you know, to see it through. As long as they paid their month's rent wherever they were, but they weren't concerned.
Do you remember why it ended?
No. I remember the taking the boat up to Everett, wasn't it, that they had the other problem. But that information we got after the strike, you see. That, and And this thing from Centralia we didn't get until after the strike. Mm-hmm. Just didn't get through to us. In fact, I don't suppose there was any means of communication except for things that were passed through labor or through the police or through management on the other side.
At that time, what papers, what newspapers, did you generally read a newspaper?
Yes, we usually had the Times, the Seattle Times, and the Post and Telegraph. And the Star. The Star was active in those days.
Were there people who read the Union Record on campus?
Yes, yes, that was read there, too. I've almost forgotten that.
Hasn't been around for a while.
No.
What did the students think about labor after the strike? Did it change their opinion of labor in any way?
No, it probably strengthened their opinions, both sides. Just didn't really help things any.
It didn't move any group in one direction.
No, I wouldn't say that it did.
Do you remember any specific people as leaders of the strike? Who did the leaders of the strike call it?
They were known as the IWW, the I Won't Works. That's the common title for them. No, I don't remember who the leader was. If I heard it, I'd know, because we did follow it. But I couldn't at this point say.
But it was considered that the IWW was leading?
Oh, yes, yes. Now, whether it was so or not, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
That was taken for granted.
By both sides, you say, of the students?
In the common conversation I heard around, it was that. But it wasn't necessarily in terms of condemning them. You were for them or you were against them. But they still used the same terms and the same thought.
Did you know any people who were in the IWW?
Not unless Harvey was.
Uh-huh. I don't think so then.
No, I don't think so then.
Do you remember Ole Hansen?
Oh, yes. Was Ole Hansen mayor then? I was trying to think the other day, knowing you were coming, whether Gill was mayor then or whether that was Ole Hansen. Yeah, and he was supposed to have had quite a little to do with bringing it to a close, I believe. Yeah. Mayor Gill, who had been mayor just before that, my mother and I lived with his widow and son in my last year in college. And Ole Hansen. I have a little prejudice against Ole Hansen. A friend of ours who majored in history and was an excellent student. Waited on table down the lower end of town, and Ole Hansen was one of the patrons of the place, and she had a wart on the side of her face, and one day he doesn't lean over and says, "I'll bite it off." So that left me with my impression of Ole Hansen.
How about Anna Louise Strong? Do you remember her?
Yes, oh yes. Yes. I've always had quite both of admiration for her get up. Why, her father was a judge in Seattle, and a friend of my early employer, my later partner. I knew a little more of them. But, of course, she went, she came back a number of times to Seattle, too. Going to the Orient.
Do you remember her at all in connection with the strike?
Not particularly with the strike. I remember her as being definitely connected with the labor side of the problems. But no, I couldn't say that. I know that her name was prominent at that time, so undoubtedly she was somewhere around it.
about Jimmy Duncan?
Jimmy Duncan is just a name to me. No, I couldn't say I had any recollection of him.
And how about Harry Orr?
Another one who's just a name to me.
I haven't talked to anyone yet. He said, oh yeah, Harry Orr. He was the publisher of the Union Record at the time.
Oh, he was?
Or the editor, I guess. Uh-huh. But it's funny that he was a low profile. Anything else? Do you remember anything else about the strike?
No, I really don't. I really don't.
If you had to say one impression, someone said the general strike, what would the one impression be? Do you remember?
I think it would be the excitement of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you imagine a general strike happening today?
Yes, I can.
Under what conditions?
Oh, I wasn't thinking of the causes. I was thinking of the consequences. It could be a pretty drastic thing. Oh, it would have to be a pretty drastic thing to bring it about. I don't know what... First, the Depression days were such that most anything could have happened. And another depression could bring, if not a strike, at least the equivalent of it, it would stop everything. Yes, that was a... That could have been very, very serious.
Can you imagine the circumstances where you would be favoring the general strike?
No. No, because to me it would mean chaos. And with no, just a complete wiping clear of the slate and having to begin over again. I suppose if I had nothing whatsoever to lose, and no, I don't think even with that I would. I'm not that type of person. I think I would always work for moderation.
And the strike you see as a very extreme...
Yes, I see that as an extreme. Especially, not as much then as it is today. Today, all you have to do is to turn off the electricity and our things have grown so big. Our companies have grown big. Our labor unions are big. Everything is big, so that anything that moves now can strangle the whole thing. I don't know any way of it going the other direction, but it, the bigness of all these things does frighten me. It has a terrific potential.
Let me ask you a few questions about after the strike. Mm-hmm. The years after the strike. First of all, what do you think have been the most important events in the world or the country since then?
Well, I think I put the Depression down as first. I think that had a changed the world. And after that, I would say I think whether I would consider the war or whether I would consider the war just the consequence of things. First, the big industrialization had taken place before that. And I would say that the height of management's power was before that. Since then, the union growth, I would perhaps put down as the biggest thing, because that has grown up now to the place where, to me, it threatens the situation as well as, and management now, it's becoming always more concentrated, which does bother. But at the same time, it has some regulations, some controls that keep it from going too far afield. Whether it continues to keep it from going too far afield, I don't know. But the bigness is the thing that scares me. And of course, it's the bigness that gives us our high standard of living and all the rest of it. So, I don't know.
Do you remember any effects of the strike on either you or on the city afterwards?
No, I can't say that I do.
There wasn't a noticeable. There was no noticeable change.
No noticeable change that I would be aware of. As I say again, remembering that I was off in the corner of the campus. And
but personally, it didn't.
No.
Didn't.
No.
What did you go on to do after the strike after that time? You told me.
Yes. Oh, I see. Well, I went on. I'd taken up architecture at the university and went on graduating math. I was an architect in Seattle for some 50 years. Now I've retired. Back to where I came from.
What sort of organizations do you remember of during that time?
Primarily just the architectural things. There were, we had an atelier, which was their club. They discouraged architects joining anything else because there was no time left. You worked nights and always on the finish of a problem. We had a deadline on Monday mornings for these problems that were sent back to New York, and so on the last night they always worked all night. It was a tradition, and you just, there was no choice.
Why did they send everything to New York?
Well, we were a very small college. In fact, it had opened just a year or two before. And all these colleges in the West worked under what was called the Beaux-Arts system. And these problems were given out from New York, the Beaux-Arts Society, and developed in the different schools, and then they were all shipped. There would be big drawings, 3 foot 6 by 3 feet, and these would have to be crated up on the and be stamped to the post office at 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday mornings.
So, were there actually any architecture faculty at school?
Yes. Mr. Gould was the head of our department, and he and Mr. Suslow really organized the architecture department. And then they had a young man from the East who had gotten his training in an atelier in New York. Not school, but atelier, which is a workshop for the architects. And then they had architects from downtown come out. But it was, well, there was a Mr. Sexton. He was full-time. We had three that I'd call pretty near full-time. And then two or three others that weren't there.
So you only were in professional organizations and system, no religious or political organizations or things like that?
No.
I'd like to ask you about a couple of movements in the last couple of years. You started to say a little about how you talk about the labor movement now. Maybe say a little bit more about that.
Well, I feel that they now are becoming too strong. I feel they had to be. They had to counteract the management side. But now, to me, they have grown too big, and their officers are too far removed from the membership. And I feel that now, the Teamsters Union, for instance, I've known Dave Beck, and now he did a wonderful thing for them to start with. But to me, he got it went to his head, and I think it has with some of the other labor leaders. And now I feel we're going to have to have controls on that, just as we have on the other end.
How do you feel about the civil rights movement?
see. How do you know I feel about that? What do you mean by that first? Maybe that'll help.
By the civil rights movement?
Yeah.
Well, I guess mostly I have in mind the 60s and the tense, I guess, mostly by black people to.
Now, that's what I rather thought that you meant. And on that, again, was it accomplished something? It didn't. Whether we would have moved without it or not, I don't know. And I think the movement has been good. And if that was necessary to move it, why, so be it. But it isn't the way I would choose to take it.
How about the student anti-war movement in the late 60s?
Again, there I'm divided on it. I felt that we had an obligation to go in, but it turned into something that should never have been. And where the turn came, I couldn't say, but there I think we had to have that pressure to force a getting out of it. I didn't like it. But it became just a terrific mess over there, and there was so much that was, we weren't doing any good. But I did feel we had an obligation to begin with. We had signed the treaty, and here was a case of aggression against a country that we had signed an agreement with. And I felt if we didn't fulfill our obligations, that it was, there was no use in having treaties. And I think that end of it, I felt during this pressure that the younger generation weren't aware of that obligation or didn't feel any obligation toward it. And condemned the whole thing and condemned those who had gone in with the best intentions in the world. But I'd like to see the whole thing drop down. Ones that have opposed it, bring to return, and forget it. There'd be many of them that did it because they just didn't have the nerve to go in, and there's many who did it from a very conscientious point of view. I admire very heartily. And then there's the great mass that just did it.
How do you feel about the women's movement?
Well, again, I feel it's going too far. There's so many things about it that seem silly to me, but fundamentally there's things that should be, the laws should be changed to give them an equal right. But I think the chairperson and the, all that sort of thing is pure bunk. Doesn't really make much difference. And I think a good many of us expect privileges from being a woman. And actually, now, I went into what was considered a man's field, and there was opposition, but in a way, I felt it was to the good. You had to be just a little better than the men to get started, and once you're started, there's no obstruction at all. In fact, it's almost an asset. But there is in a lot of things, there is discrimination, and where I feel it should be changed. But like every movement, it goes too far. As you see, I'm a moderate.
I have only one other question, actually a question from my first session, which I forgot to ask you, which is, when you were growing up, were politics discussed at home?
Yes.
With the labor struggle set?
No, I wouldn't say that they were. As a child, there was labor for anybody who wanted it, and of course, they didn't get too much, but then it didn't cost so much either. And I would say that the men that I have known in the logging business were, of course, all people who had come up from labor. And in fact, all of our prominent families here have come up from labor. And some of them reacted by thinking, well, I did it, the other fellow can do it too. And so, no help, and others took a real interest in the people under them, in a more or less a patriarchal manner. And in my, see, I grew up in the country, and there, as far as labor goes, you provided your own labor, you worked for your neighbors when they needed it, and your neighbors worked for you when you needed it, and labor and management were all one and the same. So that we really didn't have that connection. I got most of the political discussions came mostly from the outside. We were the, our father's family were the only family in our father's group, and his brothers and sisters gathered at our place, and there was a great deal of discussion of politics and things in general. Well, they were a New England family, and a good deal of it was national, and we had two Democrats and one Republican in the family, which helped the discussions. There was a lively interest in things that went on outside. But from our own living point of view, it was, I say, labor and management were one of the same.
Well, I've finished all my questions.
Okay, well, I don't know of anything else. You've done well to be able to ask that many, because I, as I say, I feel I had anything much to offer you.
Well, I think you did.
It's very
interesting stuff to me. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Any other memories, any impressions
of strike? No, that really is not my limit on it. I recall going downtown, and I was a freshman in college, to the trial of the Billingsley brothers. And they were, I guess, were they bootleggers? I guess it was a little early for the bootleggers. It was some other thing of the sort. And I know this Mayor Gill was mixed up in it. That's before I knew the family. And from my point of view, he was a terrible person. But when I came to know his family, I decided he wasn't. So it goes. Yeah, my great-grandfather had a donation claim over here on Long Lake. And he was a carpenter builder and built the Chambers houses, three brothers here. One of them is the one that was torn down for Panorama City. The old original place. And then he built a mill in Tumwater. He died in 1856, so he didn't do a great deal before then. And I think that's all. I think you might as well turn that off and keep it for another day.
Yeah. It'll skip around a lot. Okay. I didn't make up for it. One of the things that I wasn't sure I understood was whether politics were discussed much in your family when you were growing up. I know that your father was a judge.
Yes, they were. As I say, my father's brothers and sisters, they all gathered at our house. He was the only one with a family, so they all gathered there. One was a Republican, and two of them were Democrats. So the discussions were rather lively.
you remember in what terms those discussions went on? Were they, was there a discussion of labor versus capital, or Republicans versus Democrats?
It would be Republicans versus Democrats, and more national things, I think, than, well, I suppose we had a lot of state things, but they don't seem to have stuck on my mind at all.
Do you remember what papers they read?
They read whatever came in. One uncle would be the Post and Challenger of the Times, and the other one would have been primarily the Olympia papers. And I think in those days it was the Morning Olympian and the, what's the other one, the Recorder? I've got whatever they published at that time.
And how about your father, your mother?
Well, he had been Republican, and he changed to a Democrat over the silver question. He was for free silver. And the story, as I heard it, gathered it, that his friends were all very much concerned because this was a strictly Republican state, and they figured that he wouldn't be elected for anything, but he was, so it didn't seem to matter too much.
None of them then read the Union Record, you remember?
Well, the Union Record came later. That would have been after, and it was in Seattle, of course, we were down here. And I'm quite sure the uncle that was in Seattle, who was a good Republican, wouldn't have read the record.
Do you remember when the strike broke out? Did you know at the time why it was called?
I suppose I did at the time. Though I don't recall any particular discussion of it. But in the classes that I was in, there was a definite interest in things of that sort, so that undoubtedly we were following it. But it evidently, I wasn't too deeply impressed, or it would have stayed with me.
And, do you remember who called it?
Well, I assume the IWWs did. No, I don't know. I suppose it was what the other side did that caused them to call it, so you can make it any way one would want.
Do you remember what your family thought about it? Did you ever discuss it?
Well, I wasn't at home, you see. I was at the school at this time, and too far away from home to be getting the home input on it. No, I wouldn't say that there was any strong feeling as far as I know.
So it wasn't something that the next time you went home for a vacation or something that immediately came up? They didn't call up to see if you were all right?
Oh, no, there was no. In fact, I suppose the telephone company was out, too. Right. As I recall, there was no communication of any sort. I think she was completely cut off.
Did you know that, or do you remember why other workers went out other than the original strike that started from?
No, I don't. I don't know why. Actually, I would have felt that the IWW at that time was rather in Dutch with other labor unions, so it seems a little surprising to me that they went out together.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it may be that the others went out and the IWW took that time to go out too, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It just gone for me.
Other than the rumors that you wrote down, do you remember whether there was actually any violence in the strike?
Yes, there was violence down in Centralia. Of course, you didn't have all that. And then there was violence up in Everett for the boat that went up from Seattle.
And was that right around the time of the general strike?
Yes. Yes, it was all sort of a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I say that it was. If somebody would say differently, I couldn't argue with this. But I, in my mind, I put them together.
Uh-huh, it's one.
Yes.
Do you remember how long the general strike itself lasted?
I don't think it was more than a week.
And do you remember why it ended? Or why it seemed it ended?
Well, I think they gave Ole Hansen credit for it. I was never very much inclined to give him credit for anything, so I don't know.
Did you feel, to the extent that you were speaking of, that the strike had been worth it for labor?
Well, I think the answer I gave you before, that it was more the excitement of it than anything else, as far as I was concerned.
So you never, you were thinking about
I don't think I had any very deep convictions one way or the other.
Looking
if I had any, it would have been on the side of labor, but it wouldn't have been a personal thing. It would be rather abstract as far as I was concerned.
Looking back on it now, can you make any judgment about whether it was good for labor or bad for labor?
Well, I suppose all of those moves, they both helped and they hindered labor. They brought it to the public attention. That much they accomplished. But at the same time, they raised a great deal of antagonism. So that it's hard to say just whether in total it was the good or the bad for them. But it was part of the total labor movement. So I suppose in the total it's one of those battles that had some bearing on it.
Mm-hmm. Have you been a politically active person in your life?
No, I wouldn't say that I have. I would say probably the strongest feelings I had on politics was while I was still in college when on Woodrow Wilson's second term. And I felt very strongly on that.
Strongly which way?
I was for Wilson. But I've always had an interest in it. But I don't think I've ever really felt quite as much that it was totally important.
Do you usually vote in elections?
Yes.
Yes. Regularly?
Yes.
Will you say that at the time of Wilson's second term, that was probably the most involved?
That was 1916.
Were you more of a political person then than in later life? Or?
No, I don't think so. No, I would say probably a little more balanced from there out. But I regret to say I've always taken much more interest in national politics than I have in local or state. And it shouldn't be, but that's the case.
Has there been a political leader in the last couple of years who you felt spoke for you?
That I was for? You mean national?
Well, or state, even local, you felt was really representative of your views?
Well, I've watched Dixie Lee Ray with considerable interest.
What? Tell me a little about that.
Well, she's a quite an extraordinary person, and she's very direct. And there's no pussy putting around with her. And just how capable she is in things political, I don't know. I'm watching with interest. But she is a very capable person, and she's very articulate. She's a very interesting person to listen to. You could always enjoy hearing her. I felt with this last election, I voted for, that we had, against it was Mr. Spellman, who was the county, head of county, whatever it is, King County. And I think he is a very good man. And I have rather the feeling that what we needed was Dixie Lee to stir things up and then get him in on the next election to straighten them out again.
This is not relevant to what I'm doing, but I'm curious. How do you feel about the criticism she's come under for her support of nuclear energy?
I have video faith in her when it comes to nuclear energy. I feel she's as well informed as the one of the general public.
As a scientist herself, you mean?
Yes, as a scientist. And I would have a video faith in her. And it's all you have to go on as far as nuclear things go is who you're going to believe. There seem to be scientists on both sides of the fence and laymen on both sides of the fence. But I'd be willing to abide by her judgment as far as that goes.
What do you think is the most important issue facing the country today?
Unemployment. Particularly among young people and minorities and whatnot. And fact, I feel that is very much the cause of our heavy crime rate. To me, it's going to be the hardest to correct, because every move now eliminates more labor. And labor's prices are such that they're bound to try to eliminate more labor. I think we're trying for too high a standard of living for the whole kit and boodle. I don't feel that the high standard of living that we're getting is worth the candle. We're involved with things to the point where you don't have any time left to think.
What do you like most about the country?
Well, that is hard to say. I'm trying to think whether it's simply that it is my country and that I've grown up with that feeling, but I think it's more than that. I think we really do have something that the general melting pot, the fact that we represent all corners of the earth, to me is an asset. And I think our Constitution fundamentally is good. And though we don't live up to it, we at least have it to strive toward.
What do you like least about the country?
Well, I tell you, the thing that really worries me most about the country, I listen quite often to these night programs, and also if you stand in the lower part of Seattle and watch people go by, you find yourself wondering if they are capable of governing themselves. That you just wonder their capacity. But on the other hand, I think it's the best we've got.
Has there been anything new lately that's made you feel especially good?
I was pleased at Watergate. I felt that this situation has been building up for a long time. And it was high time that something happened. And I feel that it won't last forever, but I think it's had a good good dose of castor oil for the country.
Is there anything that's been in the news lately that made you especially mad?
Well, there's a lot of little things that I do, but that isn't what you're after. I couldn't pinpoint anything. I imagine there's a lot of them that came up that I would feel that way about.
But the most little annoyances rather than...
No. No, I think, as I say, I think this Watergate business is helping out. But there has been an inclination for a long time not to be concerned with just plain everyday honesty. And then, well, and the sex situation has bothered me too. And crime. Those, to me, all go together. There's a sort of a letdown in moral fiber that, to me, is bad. Some of it is good, up to a point, but it's... I feel there's a stability gone, and the fact that people are moving around so freely, to me, is bad. There are no roots. There's such a floating population. And to me, it's rather essential to feel that you're a part of something. And these young people who land here one year and land there another year have no permanent friends, no strong background. I feel it's bad.
What great people living and dead do you admire most?
Well, I'm enjoying Jimmy Carter. I think he's I like his approach to faith. And of others living today, I like the one who talks so much. the brand for president.
Stephen Humphrey?
Yeah, Stephen Humphrey. And Mike Mansfield is another I like. And I think we've sent a pretty good young chap to Congress this last year or two. I think this young Bakker may turn out to be a good man.
Are there some no longer living who you admire?
Oh, yes, plenty of them. Yes. There were the three from Nebraska that I particularly admired. Two particularly, the Follett and the... No, the others from Montana. Me and Mays. Don's the moment out of it. But the Follett particularly, admired. And Wilkie, I had great degree of respect for. He was a Republican, but there are good Republicans. And I rather admire, don't agree with his philosophy in any way, manner, or form, but I rather admire Goldwater. He speaks his mind, and you know where he stands. And that, to me, is quite a little chunk in itself. And let's see who else we had in Congress lately that I've admired. There's been quite a few of them that I thought were pretty fine people.
And most of you that you admire politicians?
Well, I was thinking in terms of politicians.
I'm sure I don't know if
I admired Warren, Justice Warren. But they're most of the people who get into public life are lawyers. So that it gives an overburden of lawyers. And others are not as well publicized. There's name a few and I'll give you my reaction to them.
Well, I don't want to start you an architect.
Oh, yes, I could go on that.
I'm sure, and I wouldn't know any.
Of course, the younger ones I don't know. Except Yamasaki. I like Yamasaki's work very much. He graduated from the University of Washington. And then the Stone that has done so much work. I like his work. But of the older ones, there was Bacon and Russell Pope. There's quite a batch of those that I like.
I'd like to ask Stephen Munkie an attitude question.
Yes.
Do you think most people can be trusted or that you can't be too careful with people?
Well, I go on the theory that you've got to assume they can be trusted. And if they can't, well, they can't, and that's all there is to it. But you've got to assume. And I find that most people react in the way you approach them. If you assume they'll be honest, they're more apt to be honest. And I found that true in so many circles. You'll be in a circle where everyone is criticizing, right and left, and somebody in the crowd will speak up with a constructive comment on someone, and you'll find that that group will turn over and will move toward a constructive point of view. And I figure that it's a personal responsibility that if each person does the best they can and is honest as they can, it's bound to wash out here and there, a little bit.
Do you think most of the time people try to be helpful, or are they mostly looking after themselves?
Again, I feel that it's a response. If you're being helpful and considerate, they'll be helpful and considerate. I found that so often. In fact, it's been kind of a game with me. If you get into a car or something, public transportation, where someone is discourteous, and just make an effort to be a little over-courteous to them, that there's a response.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that grows, and it grows the other way. Mm-hmm. And I say, I feel it's a personal thing that each person, if they try, can make a little better.
Would most people try to take advantage of you if they got the chance? Or,
I would say not. I would say not. Unless you try to take advantage of them.
Do you think what most young people need most of all is strict discipline by their parents?
No. I think what they need more is something constructive to do. I figure this younger generation is anything ahead of other generations. If they came up against a real hard proposition, I think they'd come up all right.